afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, April 29th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy hump day, Melody.
Oh, I almost forgot what day it was. Thank you for reminding me.
No, most certainly.
I'm going to do the metals report today, and we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs, but let's see what gold did today. Gold had it reversed itself, being down most of the day after the Fed made their statement. And we'll talk about that when we come back from the second segment, what the Fed did say. And I bet you all could guess what it is. More money, more money, more money. We're here to serve. And, of course, that made gold reverse its negative course today. So right now in the New York spot price aftermarket, we're looking gold up 550 at 1718. Silver was up 15 pennies at 1540. Platinum was up $8 at $783, and palladium was up $30 at $2,027. The USDX today was down 0.47 at 99.50. Crude oil, that was up $3 at 15.36. And you can only guess what the paper markets did after their beloved Jerome Powell made their statements, although it is off the high. After his comments, we have the Dow up 532, 24,633. The NASDAQ is up 306, 8,914. And the S&P, get it out, the S&P up 76 to 2,939. 10-year yield, 0.63%. It seems to like that trading range between 6.0 and 6.3. Euro was 109, a little bit stronger. And, of course, I believe there were multiple central banks this week that was confirming everything that the Fed confirmed today, that, hey, we're here to help. Just ask. In fact, you don't even have to ask. We're just going to give it to you. Mm-hmm. But you had London, Germany, Hong Kong. They were all up. Both Germany and Hong Kong, London and Germany were up to over 2.5%. So a good day for the paper markets. As just remember, it's a paper. It's a promise to pay. But in the real world, we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Dave.
Hi there.
Hi, I thought we'd talk about how we can balance our immune system. Won't that be fun?
Oh, yes, I like to balance things.
And it's easier than you think, because we're hearing about balanced immune system, you know, and really to have a healthy, balanced immune system, it has to be supported by a lot of nutrition. And then you're in a better position to resist pathogens, and you'll have a higher resistance to infections when you do that. So it's even more evident now with your COVID-19 virus circulating, and even with supposedly young, healthy individuals getting sick, hit hard, actually, by the virus. And they develop some very severe symptoms, and actually the CDC just added to the symptom list recently. So modern medicine is really kind of at a loss to know why, and this is happening with young people, and they're really looking for a drug that will slow the infection. Most physicians are at a loss at treating their patients effectively to deal with this virus. So we're going to take a look at some very basic nutrition that will assist your immune system to be successful against most, well, even the unusual plagues. Let me read you this quote by Dr. Stephen Thomas, chair of the infectious disease at Upstate University Hospital. He says, the COVID-19 virus is very unusual. Some people really fall off a cliff, and we don't have good predictors of who it is and who it's going to happen to. These people become short of breath, their heart races, they get delusional, they experience organ failure and spend weeks in the ICU. He goes on to say, understanding exactly how and why people get so sick while others feel almost nothing will be the key to the treatment. So they're kind of at a loss as to why some patients don't have symptoms, they're symptom-free, and others do. And, you know, if you get to the hospital and you're having to be in ICU, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars for a 20-day stay. So We have to ask this question then. Is the virus acting differently in people, or are the people hosting an environment that is different, which the virus will then exploit? So we have to look at it at a different angle. So also our ear, nose, and throat doctors, these specialists have an increased number of patients coming into their office. They're saying, hey, they're complaining about loss of smell and taste. So an ENT, the doctors have no clue what to tell these patients, and they're speculating. One doctor, this is Dr. Jonathan Avee, ENT in New York, he says there's a near total breakdown in taste and smell with coronavirus infection, even in the absence of other symptoms. I am unsure what is going on and not sure what to tell patients. The only thing I can think of is there's inflammation. It could be affecting the olfactory nerve or attacking the nerve itself. And we're not sure if this is a case where the loss will be temporary or permanent. So physicians are saying they think the immune system is overwhelmed and it does not know what's happening. Therefore, it takes several weeks to react. Well, first of all, inflammation is an immune system response. And secondly, seriously ill patients with this virus have an immune system that has been subjected to one or more of the following. They have a lack of immune support minerals like calcium and zinc. That's already been established, especially the young patients. They are chronically low in these minerals. Also, the immune suppression and weakness can be produced by vaccines and antibiotics, and most people have had those. Prescription medications also will flush these minerals away and undermine the integrity of an immune system response and to support cells. The vaccine-induced autoimmune disorders are also playing into this, as well as chronic medical condition that is stressing your immune system. So if you've got, you know, diabetes, renal failure, any of these chronic conditions, heart disease, it already stresses your immune system, so you're probably going to be at a high risk. So the patients with the chronic medical conditions are usually on a lot of prescription meds that deplete the minerals from the immune system that are required for the immune system to be balanced and to operate. And we're going to tell you how that works in a second. One in particular we've covered before is zinc, and that is removed with a lot of prescription drugs. And when you remove the zinc to a chronically low level, you lose your sense of taste and smell. That's no-brainer. Those without chronic health conditions are going to have low levels of zinc, and usually they're consuming a lot of processed foods and they're not getting the minerals. Also, one other thing that's come up, guys, is the D marker they're talking about in healthcare. According to what the doctors are saying, when you get a protein dimer marker in your blood, it's called a D marker. It increases your risk of mortality. So the D marker usually shows up with massive inflammation conditions. Other markers can create what is called a cytokine storm. It's a signaling molecule that's in the immune systems, and it attempts to contain your infection. Okay, it's a last ditch effort your immune system is making, but it can often lead to a fatality when it does that. So if that happens, medicine will attempt to turn off your immune system to stop that from happening, but it is risky, and they're doing it because if they don't, you can have organ damage. This is what Dr. Randy Crone, he's the director of rheumatology at Children's Hospital in Birmingham, Alabama. He says, if you see a cytokine storm, it has to be treated. Treating any infection by inflaming the immune system or impeding the immune system is always treacherous. It is a gamble, where either the cytokine storm nor the infection will run rampant. So cytokine storms that produce that D marker in your blood will have a life-threatening element, and it's very difficult to treat. So you're going to see that in the presence of these other plagues, Ebola and dengue, and get this, common influenza strains outside of the COVID-19. Isn't that interesting?
Very.
Okay, so let's look at the drugs that would promote that D marker or the cytokine storm. This is a report out of Johns Hopkins University Hospital. They stated certain drugs can promote the cytokine storm. Now, the report is not all-inclusive of drugs, but they did say that certain drugs will promote this, and they're unsure why it's being promoted when you take these drugs. But the medication they listed was Flomax, or the generic Tamsulosin, which is prescribed for urinary retention issues, like urgency, you know, people that have, you know, bladder retention problems. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are on that. Now, the cryokine protein found to be in the COVID-19, they're calling it the interleukin-6, or IL-6 for short. And the reason they're identifying this as a cryotine demarker is because it's involved with the respiratory failure part of the disease. The physicians at Columbia University at their celiac disease center discovered that people that have chronic health conditions that have inflammation associated with them will have this marker. So people with celiac disease, inflammatory diseases like irritable bowel syndrome, chronic fatigue syndrome, stuff like that. A lot of inflammation in arthritic conditions, rheumatoid conditions, gout conditions. So if you have some inflammation in the body, that also is going to put you at a serious risk with this virus. So medicine is considering using, get this, interleukin inhibitor drugs for serious cases, but that's a biologic drug. And very expensive, $18,000 for a treatment.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? So physicians are hesitant to use this interleukin inhibitor drug. And what their fallback is to use corticosteroids to remove the inflammation instead. But the corticosteroids offer a lot of side effects. And then it tends to put the brakes on your immune system. It tends to tamp it down and shut it off. And that's another ball of wax. So steroids present another risk where if they're turning off the immune system, and then you're vulnerable to an infection. And actually, physicians have learned that when you're treating the COVID-19, using the corticosteroids may not always be favorable. Well, let's look at that calcium factor, because I found this fascinating, because we talked about the zinc the other week. But the calcium is another nutrient that's really necessary for a healthy, strong immune system response. So we hear calcium's good for your bones. We rarely hear anything about it for the immune system. So New York University School of Medicine reported May 2016 that calcium is another key element that is vital for your body to destroy infections. So in addition, their research highlighted the calcium. It's needed also to have the immune system to be balanced and to prevent, get this, autoimmune diseases. So the research is published in the May 31st, 2016 Journal of Immunity. So my question is, could it be that patients not doing well, young, old, or otherwise, on the COVID-19 virus issue, do they have systems depleted in these necessary nutrients of zinc and calcium for the immune system to not only fight the virus, but also to have this balance to it? So I would say possibly yes. And the presence of calcium is going to help your immune system do several things. It helps to regulate signals in the immune system, regulates production of immune system cells. It turns off immune responses after the infection is gone. It also helps kill the infection. It gives the immune system chemicals to kill the infection, and it regulates appropriate inflammation responses so you don't have that out of hand. Prevents replication of the infection and also the spread of the infection. Here's what Dr. Stephen Fisk, he's a professor of pathology, New York University, said: we found that calcium signals play a vital role in keeping the immune system finely balanced, ramping responses up or down as appropriate in time. So what you see is, when you have your calcium, it's this essential mineral that is involved with the signal with cell membranes, and it works like a flow switch, is another way to look at it. So calcium helps the immune system kick on to fight the infection and then power down after the infection is gone. So it regulates that flow switch. And when it's initiated, also it helps the immune system T cells go into production, and those are your antibody cells that actually kill the virus. So it influences a lot of transcription of proteins along with your zinc, and it helps to block infections from replicating. So your minerals are vital, according to modern medicine now. And if you have adequate calcium and zinc, your immune system will be balanced and strong. If you're critically low in those, the immune system will struggle. It won't produce the proteins as a defense, especially with regard to, get this, quote, viral infections. So if you're low in zinc and calcium, you're going to struggle with all kinds of viral infections. And you can read the report. It's April 2017 Journal of Clinical Investigations. So so what happens is the virus can't attach to your cell and invade and replicate because you have those minerals. Wow. It's not hard. I know we're out of time, but there Yeah, so lots of foods and herbs have those minerals in them. They can give us a call at 866-229-3663 for the full report. Then go to thepowerherbs.com and order calcium liquid or astragalus root high in zinc, and be well out there. Yep.
Does staying inside affect your immune system? Can it weaken it?
You need a certain amount of fresh air and sunshine, right. So definitely, you know, do your walk around the neighborhood once a day. It's going to be helpful. Get some fresh air. Staying inside. Also, your environmentally controlled areas. So if your outside air is warmer and more humid, you have less risk of the virus. Okay?
Oh, all righty. Appreciate it. Thank you, Wendy. Look forward to having you here next week.
Okay. Having a Mother's Day sale started today. 25% off. Take care.
Fantastic.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Dave, I saw a funny cartoon today, and the headline was First Day Being Back at School. So then when you scrolled it down, it showed this classroom, but all the people that were sitting in the chair were like over 80 years old. I thought it was cute.
A long, strange trip.
Yes. I thought it was kind of cute. I mean, there's a lot of kind of cute jokes out there. We have to, and I'm going to put a couple of them in the newsletter this week. Well, come Monday. So there was a few of them that I saw, but they're a little more politically driven, but, you know, in reference to the debt and the amount of money that is being printed, but it still made me chuckle. So I think that's also important. Well, you know, the GDP, before we get on and talk about the Fed, I think we're going to talk about the Fed, aren't we? Yeah.
Sure.
We're going to first talk about the GDP, because not very many people talk about that one. GDP fell 4.8% in the first quarter. These were the numbers that were released this morning. And it was stronger than what a lot of economists had expected. And this is the first negative GDP reading since the 1.1% decline in the first quarter of 2014. And it's the lowest level since the 8.4% plunge in the fourth quarter of 2008. Of course, during our big financial crisis. However, we get two more revisions. I think it's going to be worse. Although we did have January. So really, you're only looking at and probably half of February, most of February, right, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
So if this drop is mainly March, right?
Late February and all of March.
Yeah. So then I would think that this next quarter could be pretty severe. I mean, that's just what I'm thinking. But anyway, the... So the biggest drags on the economy, of course, were consumer spending. That's no big surprise. I mean, we're 70% of consumer spending. Non-residential fixed investments, exports, and inventories. Residential fixed investment, that jumped 21%. Along with spending from both the federal and state governments, that did help offset some of the damage. Consumer expenditures that comprise of 67% of the GDP, that plunged 7.6% in the quarter, as well as all non-essential stores that were closed. And, of course, the cornerstone of the U.S. economy, as we all know, was pretty much taken out of commission, Dave.
Well, your skepticism about the numbers are shared by many economists out there. Durable goods spending also tumbled 16%. Expenditures on service down 10. Exports dropped 9, and imports fell 15. Those including a 30% drop in services. Most economists see the U.S. already in recession, even though the technical definition is generally two consecutive quarters of negative growth. And, of course, the fourth quarter of 2019 saw GDP up 2.1%. However, that view is largely because first quarter numbers only include a few weeks of the economic shutdown brought about by the coronavirus, and even at that, probably underestimate the real damage. The Bureau of Economic Analysis itself pointed out in a technical note on the GDP release that the initial reading of negative 4.8% is probably inaccurate, which is to say understated. This is what they said. The full economic effects of the COVID-19 pandemic cannot be quantified in the GDP estimate for the first quarter of 2020 because the impacts are generally embedded in source data and cannot be separately identified.
So, what all does that?
Well, I mean, technically means as they start pulling out the details over the next month for their quote first revision, they're gonna see additional data that is likely or is presumably going to result in, you know, first quarter numbers being, you know, between 8 and 9%, at least according to some estimates.
Yeah, but don't you believe that by the time the third estimate comes out, this GDP report just doesn't mean anything anymore?
Well, it depends what happens in the third quarter. I still think my guess is that, you know, certainly the second quarter numbers are going to be perhaps the worst in history. And at the same time, let's just say second quarter shows a downturn of 14-15%. And at the same time, after having looked at some of the details or gotten the details from businesses, and remember, it's harder to get a lot of these numbers right now because so many of the businesses are closed. But as the BEA drills down and takes a look at the details, that's where they're going to come up with higher numbers. So, you know, 14-15% reduction in the second quarter, together with a revised estimate of say 8.25% for the first quarter, it's them's are real numbers. Once that happens, of course, the first quarter.
Okay, all righty. Well, until we try to reconnect with Dave, not sure what happened to him. You know, my question I was going to ask him is it a coincidence that they released this number of the GDP at the same time that Jerome Powell was making his Fed statement, and therefore the paper markets just sort of washed over the GDP numbers and just sort of rallied around the Fed and his promises, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. There was a new survey that showed that the economy could take 1 to 2 years to rebound to full strength. You have the Federal Reserve and Congress. They're having already committed historic sums to fight this pandemic. We'll have to commit trillions more. And the Fed's balance sheet already at an unprecedented $6.6 trillion. The survey respondents see it rising on average to close to $10 trillion. The additional trillions will be added by the end of the current quarter. This is what the respondents expected. Congress, having already committed about $2.5 trillion, is seen putting in an additional $2 trillion. John Cutter, Chief Investment Officer at Ardent Asset Management, said that his guess is that the virus itself will largely disappear within a year, but that the structural, social, and economic impacts will be with us much longer. Now, people are saying this all based on having a strong structure to begin with. We didn't have that strong structure. So they're estimating it a year or two. It's going to take a lot longer. Jack Kleinheinz, he's the chief economist for the National Retail Federation. He said that the policy response has been appropriate, but policy takes time to work its way into the economy. Many small businesses stand at risk. Despite the massive relief, respondents are still seeing the headline unemployment rate rising to 19%, and we all believe that that is going to be much, much higher. 33% in the survey believe that the economy won't be fully restored until the second quarter of 2022. And 19% believe it will be back by year end. Another 19% believe it can happen even earlier. I want to drink what they're drinking because they got to be on something, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Zandi, he's the chief economist at Moody Analytics, said a vaccine, of course, is essential for any type of economy to gain traction. Of course, that's what they're going to be pushing in order to get the economy back here. Show me your arm, please. Let's see what else we have here. I want to get down to we knew the Federal Reserve. They concluded its two-day meeting this afternoon. It also pledged to continue its historically aggressive policy stance until it is comfortable that the U.S. economy is back on its feet. Specifically, the FOMC meeting said it would maintain its current interest rate target between 0% and 0.25%. The ongoing public health crisis will weigh heavily on economic activity, employment, and inflation in the near term, and poses considerable risks to the economic outlook over the medium term. It added the committee expects to maintain this target range until it is confident that the economy has weathered recent events, is on track to achieve its maximum employment and price stability. And it goes on and it goes on and it goes on. The officials announced 10 separate programs aimed at providing market liquidity. 10! And getting loans to businesses and consumers in need. Well, some of these have yet to be implemented, so I guess those they're saving the big guns for a little bit later. In assessing the current state of affairs, the committee noted bleak conditions across multiple sectors of the economy. And I think we have Dave back. Is that correct?
It is true. I am back. My apologies. I had some kind of power outage, and it's back. But
good.
Blew me out. But I'm back. Hopefully to stay.
Okay. Are you gonna have bad weather up there?
No. Not at all. No.
Well, I was just talking about the Fed's meeting today, and about where they have announced 10 separate programs that have been aimed at providing this market liquidity, and there's still some that are yet to be implemented. And I said they're holding the big guns to bring in for when they really need it. The statement had continued weaker demand and significant lower oil prices are holding down consumer price inflation. To support the flow of credit to households and businesses, the Federal Reserve will continue to purchase Treasury securities and agency residential and commercial mortgage-backed securities in the amounts needed to support smooth market functioning. I guess if you're in the stock market, this makes you feel real comfortable that that's not going to crash.
They've got our back. That's what they're thinking. They've got our back.
Yeah.
They're also going to continue to offer these large-scale overnight repurchase agreement operations as well. That's been worth several hundred billion dollars over the past several months.
Since September.
Mm-hmm.
Since September. And, it's just amazing. When I listen to CNBC in the morning, I listen to Bloomberg. No one talks about these things. They just don't talk about it.
That's Melody. That's why this program is so valuable, because we do.
And you know what, Dave, I don't know too many financial programs anywhere that really go into the details. Oh, some do. I mean, there's a lot of good financial people out there, don't get me wrong, but it's amazing. It really is. Home sales are going to take a deep dive. They did in March. as most of the economy was shut down and you had home buyers and sellers pull out of the spring market, the busy spring market. But Dave, I was also told by people who were looking for a home and they filled out their mortgage applications and so forth, there were some that weren't funding. They just flat out weren't funding. So, you know, I'm sure that it seems like after the Fed got involved in everything, they seem to be lightening up a little bit to where they do more funding. But, you know, the money's beginning to flow, so maybe we'll see a little bit. But signed contracts to buy existing homes, referred to as pending home sales, that fell 21% compared with February and were 16% lower annually. And the regionally pending sales fell 14% in the Northeast for the month and were 11% lower than a year ago. In the South, sales dropped 20% for the week and 18% annually. And in the West, they fell 20% weekly and 22% compared a year ago. Anything else you'd like to add on to that, Dave?
Well, just that lenders have been tightening their underwriting standards. Like increasing minimum credit scores required of applicants, reducing the total amount of debt relative to their income that's permissible. And this is at a time when mortgage rates, the 30-year mortgage rate's at a record low, 3.4% last week.
Yeah, but wasn't it just a year ago that they were actually loosening their, not
sure,
tightening their requirements? I mean, they were beginning to give everybody and their brother a loan.
That's absolutely right.
So how quickly they turn on us, don't they?
Yeah. And now you got the government's mortgage forbearance program. That's adding risk to the overall market.
Yeah. Hey, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. 375-4188. I know we got a lot of fans of baseball. I'm not so much. But anyway, it is America's pastime, Dave. And you're going to bring us baseball in your segment of Levity is Golden.
Yeah, you know, it's as we were talking in between segments, it's been really, really hard the last month to find news that's not totally related to or even indirectly related to the coronavirus. It's become an all-consuming news item. But there are other things out there that are either important to us as a society or that are important to us in these particular times as just a break from that intensity. So I thought, hey, it's the end of April. We should be ending the first full month of a baseball season. And after all, it is American's pastime, as you said. Now, maybe it's a dream scenario. Maybe it's premature to get excited. And then again, maybe it just might work. Major League Baseball officials have become cautiously optimistic that the season will start in late June, no later than July 2nd, playing at least 100 regular season games. Normally, it would be 162 before the playoffs. And not only would baseball be played, but it would be played in their own major league ballparks, albeit with no fans under one scenario, some fans under another that has less support. MLB is considering a three-division, 10-team plan in which teams play only within their division. A concept gaining support among owners and executives, among other reasons, because it would entail a lot less travel and going to places that may or may not be doing well in the post-reopening.
Do they usually fly commercial, though?
Each team has their own charter.
Right.
Their own charter jet. But it's not a matter of interacting with people on a plane. Besides the social distancing among team members and staff, I believe it's going to the different cities and hotels. I mean, the more hotels, other
right,
things being equal,
right,
the more uncertainty, right? But it would abolish the traditional American and National Leagues and temporarily realign the divisions based on geography. Now, the plan, pending approval of medical experts and providing that COVID-19 testing is more available to the public, certainly would eliminate the players to be in isolation and allow them to play at their home ballparks while severely reducing travel. The divisions would keep many of the natural rivals together while playing one another before an expanded playoff format. Now, it's too early to expound on any details, But MLB officials sounded really, sincerely, cautiously optimistic. It's also not known whether teams would have to open the season in Arizona, Florida, and Texas for a couple of weeks as their belated spring training before everyone could return home to their home stadiums. Yet they still could squeeze in 100 to 110 games and perhaps even have several thousand fans in attendance before or during the playoffs, again, keeping social distancing guidelines in place. One of the additional benefits to playing in major league cities is it would alleviate a possible split among players who are opposed to playing the entire season in those three states I just mentioned. Several high-profile players expressed strong resistance to playing the entire season away from their families, even a shortened one. Now, MLB and union officials have yet to engage in formal discussions about the financial ramifications of playing without fans, and three owners said that they'd refuse to play unless the players were willing to take a pay cut. Yet there's now optimism among execs that they could settle their differences on a sliding scale on the loss of revenue from gate receipts, parking, and concessions. teams would also have to revise their revenue sharing plan. The most encouraging signs, MLB officials said, is that testing is becoming more available with more states reopening or thinking about reopening. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot said their teams could play in their own ballparks this summer. So things are looking up in that respect. If you're a fan of the pastime, MLB officials are hoping it won't be necessary to quarantine players, but that'll, I guess, remain to be seen. One of the execs said this is going to be a season like we've never seen before, indeed, but that's fine. At least it's a change of, excuse me, at least it's a season, and a season of change at that, Melody. That's this week's Levity is Golden.
Well, would this be a permanent change?
No, it would, I'm sure they're hoping it would just be for this year, to allow a season to be some kind of even shortened season, but something that could be played and televised and at least bring in some partial revenues, if not, the full, I forget what the annual, it's several billion dollars of radio and television money.
Amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. Well, you know, speaking of money.
Money.
Well, gee, is there any doubt that there is a consensus that there's going to be that the recent round of stimulus payments don't go very far for those who lost their jobs and, you know, are still struggling to get by? You still have a lot of people who are waiting on their payments. Others have learned that they don't qualify. And so a lot of folks are wondering if there's going to be a second round of checks. And, of course, I'm sure there will be, but along with everything else, just to keep everything going. But there was another survey. Nearly two-thirds of Americans will need another stimulus check within the next 3 months. What is that, the likelihood of that happening? With the economic fallout from the pandemic growing exponentially, three different relief or stimulus packages have already been enacted. The only one included payments directly to individuals. The $1,200 payment that qualifying adults received as a direct deposit, 70 million people are still waiting for their checks in the mail, was part of the larger CARES Act. And, of course, that was the first one, I believe, that they did, and valued at $2 trillion. And, of course, we're at number four. Where there's questions on whether it'll be a phase four of economic stimulus. And without a doubt, Dave, I do believe there will be.
CARES 2. I mean, the House wanted to pass this next round by May 4th. In addition to direct payments to individuals, they're talking about additional aid for state and local governments, upwards of $500+. Billion dollars, in addition to the $150 billion provided in CARES 1, plus free health care coverage for coronavirus patients. The president has not ruled it out. He said, at least earlier this month, we could very well do a second round of direct payments. It is absolutely under serious consideration. Whether or not there will be the wherewithal among the administration and House and Senate leaders remains to be seen. We don't know exactly what it looked like, but there are some proposals on the table. Two House members proposed the Emergency Money for the People Act, EMPA, as it's being called. That would provide a new round of stimulus payments of, listen to this, $2,000 a month.
That's just unbelievable.
To U.S. Really citizens and residents over the age of 16 who earn $130,000 or less in a year. After the first 6 months, program could be renewed for an additional 6 months. unless the employment to population ratio reaches a pre-COVID-19 level of 60%. Now, that $2,000 per month figure would be adjusted for different types of tax filers. For example, married filers who earn $260,000 or less would get $4,000 a month, the rate for two individuals. Mm. And there's some other add-ons as well.
Yeah, I mean, it just really is, you know, it just boggles the mind. We thought we were surprised when they were doing all the bailouts in 2008 and quantitative easing. And, you know, we thought that was, I mean, my gosh, that was unheard of. And now we have this.
You know, as you said last October when the deficit for fiscal year 2019 had come out and new projections were coming out for the next 10 years, and they were showing some pretty incredible figures, and you were saying at that point that forget them, that's already dead on arrival, they'll be close to double that.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, here we are a little more than 6 months later, and we're on that road.
Well, thank you for remembering that, Dave.
Oh, well, hey, it's it's important for listeners, I believe, to just to recognize we do our homework here, and you've been around this for a long time, and you know, some people can, particularly in this day of taking shots in social media, just say, hey, it's irresponsible to say things like that. Well, it is until it isn't.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I know I won't like is, we're going to have a new normal when it comes to more surveillance.
Oh, gosh, what that's going to look like.
Oh, I know. And, well, you take advantage of a crisis. You don't let a crisis go wasted. Whether in the workplace or whether it's going to be at the mall, you can pretty much expect that the opened up world will involve more intrusive security measures and surveillance. All of these new coronavirus protocols that companies are considering for their workers and customers, from contact tracing and temperature taking to heat mapping and immunity passports, that's have privacy and civil liberties implications. How many people are just going to say, well, if it keeps me safe, it's okay?
I'm sure. No. I'm sure more than we wish or know.
Yeah, well, there's evidence that people are less concerned with privacy than before the pandemic hit and more concerned with health. They still may not be ready for a world where their blood is tested for antibodies before boarding a plane. And, you have the Dubai-based Emirates Airlines, they've started to do so.
Jeez.
Delta CEO Ed Bastian said that the airline is considering immunity passports. Other options could have a far broader reach. Employers are entitled to mandate that workers get their temperature taken at the workplace, report any symptoms to their boss, and get a vaccine. You're not going to be able to work unless you have a vaccine. So you better get prepared. Apple and Google are collaborating on an app-based system for contact tracing that uses Bluetooth to determine if users have recently been in close proximity to someone with the virus.
Yeah, listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Under this technology, each participating user's phone will send out a random and frequently changing key to identify itself. If someone later reports they tested positive, their phone broadcasts out the keys it came in contact with, allowing those other users to be notified that they were in close contact to someone with the virus. To protect privacy, supposedly, and limit the potential for abuse, no data location, uh, no, location data, is used or will be used. Individuals have to voluntarily participate, and only health authorities are permitted to access the technology. Google and Apple plan to release the technology in two phases. The first slated for mid-May of this year. That's 2 weeks. The two companies will build the technology into Android and iPhone operating systems, but it will require a user to download an app. The second step, the technology will be more deeply integrated into the operating systems, so people won't have to download a separate application to begin participating. Looks like companies are going to be collecting a lot more information about people, Melody, through contractless payment systems and through various technologies like these that will track people's virus exposure. Bottom line, looks like we're all, or many of us, are going to be forced to be more biosecure under the assumption that one infection could infect an entire village. We live in interesting times, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. And again, gee, if it keeps me safe, everybody will go along with it. It's just, it is. Well, I hear the music, probably the perfect timing for today. Thank you, Dave. We had a great program today, and I want to thank all the listeners for joining us, and we will be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.